in respect of our signature.
Yeah. So shall we, can we call the first document ANC1 for fear or in anticipation there might be an ANC2 document at a later stage? And call the DA1 DA1 on an understanding there might be a DA2 document at some stage. And same with the IFP, BDIFP, IFP1. And the same with the ACDP, ACDP1. So that if you do produce another document, we shall refer to that as the ACDP2 and so on.
Is this the ANC1?
I take that the Honourable Mania has been informed about the numbers that we've given the documents yesterday. That's fine. Honourable members, for those of you that are old enough, I thought I might remind you it's Guy Fawkes today.
And why in Parliament?
It used to be a very, very important day in the lives of those of us that are old enough.
Mr. Chairman, the only man who went to Parliament with honest intentions.
Then I'm also informed it is the secretary's birthday, and I don't think I... It was yesterday, I'm told. She tried to hide it. She classified that information and she only declassified it this morning, so... I'm sorry, sir. I'm not going to allow any singing because we were not informed in time. Honourable members, we... left here yesterday on the understanding that documents would be transmitted to the members overnight by email. It appears that everybody has received the documents, and I think what we are expecting now is a presentation from the Honourable Abrasini, followed by a presentation from the Honourable Swat. Is the Honourable Swat also requesting? I think we should. Can I then ask that to allow the presenter to finish before questions are put, because it sometimes interferes with managing the time if we allow interference. It's difficult to manage, and we could sometimes lose the time factors. So shall we allow the presenters to finish their presentation first before we ask questions of clarity, so you can just note down those things. Honourable Abrasini, are you ready to go? And then we shall take you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Then I hand over to you, Honourable Abrasini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the outset, I wish to thank you and the for the chairmanship and the possibility enabled to us to provide inputs almost on an equal basis. And in response to the spirit with which you have conducted these proceedings, what I'm presenting to you are IFP amendments proposed by the IFP. They are not IFP amendments. We are trying to engage in this process in the interest of the country. We don't look at this as a political process. We are concerned about creating something which is not going to be a problem to democracy, irrespective of who the majority party may be now in the future. This is a foundational piece of legislation. And it is with this spirit that what we put forward, I almost look at being technical. I made it in my in my heading a disclosure of ideological premises. And the ideological premises are those of liberal democracy. But there is no politics in it. Now, starting from, if I can take you through this document, we have submitted amendments on the basis of amendments to the actual text. And if I can take you through the definitions, there are a number of definitions which ought not to be there, or those might not be there, like the one about clear and about the right to know. It's not used in the bill. But we may have a discussion further down on whether or not we want to have definitions of things which are not used in the bill for purposes of creating a framework to the regulations. I'm just pointing that out now. We have recast the definition of national intelligence. We're talking about the the definition of national interest along with all the other submissions. Apologies, let me to understand and hope. Okay, the first one is legitimate interest. In the definition of legitimate interest that we make, and this is an amendment which will go with other amendments that I will present later, we make reference to the defense of one's own rights. If somebody needs to access a piece of information to defend your rights, that's part of a legitimate interest. It's not just the legitimate interest of the state, but the legitimate interest of an individual, of an affected individual. The type of amendments which flow from these are analogous to the one in PAIA, which makes also reference to one's own rights. The definition of national security is amended, and we are all trying to deal with this definition. I think that we know what we are talking about. And we're talking about something which is major, affects the whole of the country, it's foundational and creates chaos. It's not the individual act of criminality. And there is a definition which is far from being complete, but moves into that direction. Then the next thing on which I call your attention, Mr. Chairman, is the deletion of the definition of state security, also state security matter. I will address you on that when the actual section comes, but I'm just pointing that now that the definition has been deleted. Now, having done so, if I may call your direct your attention to the to sections, to clause 6, we have added an additional, we have changed the J and what we are trying to do here along with the amendment of the definition of provisions is to transform the minister from the regulator as it is into a sort of coordinator, a conductor of an orchestra in which there is a common script in the statute and in the regulation, but everyone plays its own instrument in various departments. So rather than making everything subject, all the most important elements of this section, which are the one which counter against the reasons of security, rather than making them subject to security, we are proposing a balancing test, in balancing the legitimate interest. Again, legitimate interest was amended to include one's own right, referring paragraph A to J. The minister, a relevant official or a court, must have due regard to security of the Republic. The way it was before is that the security of the Republic is a consideration, overrides everything else set out in clause 6, which makes the rest of the clause somehow meaningless. Then, moving to 7, the way 7 was written, gives the minister the power to issue regulations and becomes the minister of all affairs and points of security in each and every department, which evokes the image often spoken about by the Honorable Smart of the spooks running amok in each department. And the key is that of issuing regulations. So what we are looking at here is transforming this power of issuing these specific regulations in non-binding guidelines to assist the persons of the department concerned, which guidelines identify ABC. So they don't prescribe. It is really the responsibility of each department to determine how to do it within the parameters of the state and within the parameter of the additional regulations which the minister can issue. But in respect of this specific provisions, which are called to the operational discretion of each department, our submission is to downgrade them from binding regulations to guidelines. And then that ties with the amendment of subclause 6 and 7, which reads, any person responsible for the classification of information having a due regard to the guidelines contemplated in this section shall apply this act under the relevant circumstances. This act includes the regulations. So it is really for the head of home affairs or foreign affairs or whatever it is, justice, to look at the act, look at the regulation and apply them within the department and follow the guidelines and the will, unless there is a reason to depart from them. So within government, guidelines are always quite binding. It's a matter of perception. And we carry this amendment into the amendment of the following section 8, in which 8.1 becomes subject to this proviso that I just read, 7.6, and then there is no need to have the subsection 2 if that is accepted. Moving on, need a little break just to direct your attention to subchapter 5, where I'm in agreement to the deletion of national interest.
Are you following me?
Yeah. Okay. Just checking up. But I will tend to be convinced, but as I sit here before you all, I'm less convinced about the need of deleting the classification of commercial matters, which is not in this text. I don't know why it's not in this text. It should have been here. It's part of the problems of the text given to me, but it should be here. It's not deleted. Then moving to the next step, and that's also, I brought this also in the definition, and I did not point to the definition of harm, but throughout the bill, whenever there is harm, the criteria that I suggest is that the harm or the danger of harm must be clear, present, corroborated, and objective. These are the four criteria to identify the harm. Why is that? Because it's the very nature of intelligence to accept, to consider a danger, any possibility which cannot be discounted. The intelligence method is different from the police method, where the suspicion of an action is based on probable cause. Very often the risk is postulated upfront, and the fact that one cannot reach a conclusion that the risk does not exist then leads to a danger being identified. That's the risk assessment and intelligence. To trivialize in an example, the fact that it cannot be determined with sufficient certainty that I am not a security risk will not enable me to have a top secret security clearance. It's not about what I've done, but what I am likely to do. And this is very speculative, it's very much into the future. It needs to be tied by the criteria of clear, must be clear, present, corroborated, and objective. Then moving to 16. Now, the issue with the post classification is that you can classify an entire category, and it is the mixed bag. The entire bag gets a top secret stamp, and whatever is in it could be the grocery list gets classified. So here we are saying that the information shall not be subject to both classification and classification by category unless the applicable classification is warranted in respect of each piece of relevant information. Relevant information, and as it's defined, will aggregate things which are basically the same. So an information which has got classifiable and unclassifiable components will still be classifiable. And again, on 17, the amendment of clear, present, corroborated, and objective harm or danger thereof. directly caused by the disclosure of the relevant information, not speculative. It's the, it should not be a what-if test. And if it, then moving to 17, is the Steve Swart clause, if you allow me. Any you're not following me. Any classified information which falls within the public domain or is disclosed in a manner which can be easily accessed by people other than those authorized to access it shall be deemed no longer classified, save in respect of anyone who first acquired such information unlawfully or unlawfully caused such information to become of public domain or so disclosed. Basically, if the cat is out of the bag, you can't prosecute the second guy who picks up the cat or puts it on YouTube when it was on the Cape Times first. Now, the it's a mistake. Instead of subject to 18.3, it should be subject to 17.3. Again, it carries the public domain exception into the provision. Now, on 19, this to tie up, at a certain point, people will be authorized to classify an information. They get the authorization from the Director General to classify. It would stand to reason that whoever received through the chain of authority the authorization to classify a document should have the same power to declassify it. And many emails are classified. The guy recognized that he classified it irregularly or recognizes that is unwittingly covering a crime or a misdemeanor, and then he needs to be able to reclassify it without going and getting permission from the person above him hierarchically. Now, the maximum protection period. This is a strange provision, as it states. There, and I'm making this point also in respect of certain provisions. The Act gives us a criteria for classification. A, B, C, D, you classify. A, B, C, not D, you don't classify. What is suggested here is that after the expiry of the term, the only criteria to extend the classification, if A and B applies, crucial or safeguarding the national interest and the necessary to prevent demonstrable physical and life-threatening harm. We suggest that add also C. It must still be in compliance with A, B, C, D, which justified its classification in the first place. Along the same rationale, we suggest that the deletion of 21. 21 gives a different set of criteria to continue the classification. We suggest that the same criteria which apply to classify should apply to the continuation of the classification. If it is ABCD, it should still be ABCD. There is no point in setting something else which appears to be a lesser measure, so that there is a presumption that it still needs to be classified. It's a lower benchmark, when it should be just the opposite. After that period to continue it, the presumption is that time makes it no longer necessary. So the middle ground, the median, is let's keep the same text. Mr. Chairman, I'm almost done. The 10-year review. Again, more concern about the many provisions in law that call for review. The review doesn't happen and nothing happens. There is no way of enforcing it. So we suggest that the review or the classification lasted. If that classification is so important that you're withholding the information from the public, you can very well getting around reviewing it. And if you can't bother reviewing it, perhaps it's not worth keeping it secret. Both for the lapsing and the reviewing, we are suggesting a lowering of the time from 20 to 10 years, from 20 to 15 years for the lapsing, and from 10 to 7 years to the for the reviewing. Now, who can review the ask for the review of the classification? We think that it's important, consistently with prior, to also have somebody who is adversely affected. Then with the definition of legitimate interest, including the rights, one's own personal rights, comes into play again, and if somebody, if an affected person cannot, has an interest in having something declassified, should be entitled to ask for a review, even though if it's not one of the bodies referred in that section. And I would eliminate the threshold of a genuine research interest or legitimate public interest. Here, government is doing something that it shouldn't be doing. It's an exception. The exception is to classify something. So it should be able to be challenged on the basis of, hey, why are you doing it? And ask for a review. So then, which justify the proposed deletion of 2 and 3. Then on the appeal, and I carry the same concept there. The way the appeal seems to be working, it's only in respect of a request for declassification. It doesn't satisfy the challenge to classification. It may be the same, but to be absolutely clear, that it does cover the situation in which somebody says that should not be classified, rather than requesting the declassification, I added that. The difference lying in the fact that when something is declassified, it's like terminating a contract. When you terminate a contract, you don't eliminate the contract. You just stop the effects of the contract from the time of termination. So the declassification does the same. The information was classified until that point, and from that point on will be declassified. But if you committed a crime by divulging it while it was still classified, the declassification will not eliminate the wrongful conduct. And if the challenge is about it not having been properly classified to begin with, that will not help. Hence the nature of this amendment. Now, if I can direct your attention to the following page, the consequential amendments which may not require your attention right now, but the 1 to 28 does. And let me tell you, this is major, that it solves all the problems with a few strokes of a pen. In my humble opinion, solves all the problems raised during public hearings raised by the Honorable Smart and by other people in the ANC as well. And by coordinating this bill with PAIA, then we get everything in terms of that which needs to be disclosed must be disclosed. That is consistent with PAIA carrying the provision that PAIA intends to override or supersede any subsequent legislation in conflict with it. I personally like to have because of my own formal training, I don't think that any such provisions has any value in law, because a law cannot tell the next law how the next law behaves. I mean, the fundamental principle of lex posteriori, delta priori, cannot be undermined. But the intention in PAIA is that of PAIA having a special place in the legal system, not being able to be amended. If we want to respect what this does, it turns the may into a must. If PAIA makes that available, you must make it available and you must declassify. So all that which PAIA says in mandatory terms that must be made available, must be made available. No, no discussion. Then, if I can direct your attention to the following page, I eliminate, suggest the elimination of clause 32 for the reasons stated before in respect of the minister not being the conductor, not the person in charge. And there's no need to put the minister in charge to resolve a dispute. The disputes arise, they're resolved on the basis of the law, they're resolved on the basis of all the many, many mechanisms within the institutional machinery to resolve disputes between departments and all the way to the president, to the DG forum, etc. And at the end, the law is the criterion in which disputes must be resolved. This is a very unusual provision where one minister is given the power to resolve disputes between organs of state, and I submit all to be deleted. Moving to offenses and penalties, we as a party do not believe in minimum sentencing. If we look at what has been done in respect of sex crimes, if they've achieved just the opposite effect, and we have submissions at the Department of Justice, judges with conscience will end up finding people not guilty when the minimum sentence is disproportionate in respect of the nature and extent of the crime committed. So throughout, we eliminate all the minimum sentences to establish the discretion of the judiciary, and there's no reason in a field like this to depart from sound principles of criminal law. It's not a situation where one is to placate the high-rate masses with public hangings, whether they are warranted or not. And then there is 33B, which too is short but big. And then it has got two parts, one which is more acceptable, the other one which may require greater debate. And then the affirmative defenses. The first affirmative defense is if there is an erroneous classification, you don't go to jail. Anyone charged with an offense under this act should be entitled to raise as a full disculpatory defense. A, the erroneous classification of the information concerned. Somebody classified top secret my grocery list and it gets disclosed, it should be able to say they should not have been classified in the first place. And the second one, the disclosure of the relevant information being done for a compelling reason of public interest and importance. Now, I have driven here a compromise between different things being said. By making it a defense, this only arises when somebody is charged. So somebody is really taking his chances. It's not a situation of in which the alternative proposal was that of saying something in which is in the public interest that cannot be classified or should be deemed not being classified. This is classified. But only before trial somebody can stand up and must demonstrate that it is in the compelling reason of public interest. So the burden is on the accused. Still needs to be accused, still needs to be satisfied. It's a balance. I submit that it will address the situations where the classification was wrong and was against us all, against the people of South Africa. But it will not open the floodgates because people will think twice when they've got a document marked top secret. They will think twice about putting it on the internet because they can only rely on this once charged, and it's compelling reason of public interest. So the judge is going to really look at this interest or importance. He's going to look at this carefully. But obviously if there is a hole in the dam, that information is classified and all the people downstream from the dam stand to be killed, that's a matter of public importance and public interest. Somebody should be able to blow the whistle, warn the people before the dams collapse. Then, if I can shift to the next one, and this is a little tying up on the classification of interception interference with classified information. In the others, there is an element of psychology. I've made some addition to 3 and 4, 1 specifically designed to overcome security measures. Otherwise, my model could be used for the purpose of my computer and would send Apple or, what is it, HP to jail, and needs to be clarified. And also in 4, there is need for intentionally and knowingly be added, and I will motivate there when we get there on a word on a close by close basis. Then I, if I can direct you to 36, Mr. Chairman, we are almost there. I have eliminated the registration of intelligence agents. Now this doesn't really belong here. It's there is no definition of what an agent is. Again, the gap between the intelligentese language and the legalese language is huge. I mean, you're an agent, I'm an agent. It's, what's an agent? If you look at proper pieces of legislation like the 70 years old American Registration of Foreign Agents Act, it's very broad and it's got exceptions. It defines things and defines what needs to be registered, and it goes beyond intelligence. Especially if you look at, if you cross-reference this sentence close to the definition of intelligence, it's very broad. A foreign official coming here for to deal with funds for an extradition of a criminal to be extradited abroad would require to register within this section. So it's highly problematic. It should have its own piece of legislation. And it's not something that the committee and how a committee like the one we are can deal with. Then I also suggested for the same reason the deletion of clause 14, which is giving false information. I mean, this is, when we go, we're trying to unpack what it means. It's very problematic what it means to give false information. And I suggest it be deleted. Again, it doesn't belong there. It needs to have a piece of legislation of its own with the proper definitions. Then there is this prohibition of disclosure of state security matter, which baffled me. Because these are not things which are classified. Because if there are things which are classified, they would fall under disclosing classifications. It's over and above, irrespective of being classified, press deals with that which should have been classified but has not been classified. It's very uncertain. I don't know what it refers to if it doesn't refer to things which are classified. It creates another set of things which are protected. But, and I think unless somebody can explain, it doesn't belong there. It seems to be pleonastic and uncertain in the application, and I suggest that it be deleted. The then on 46, there is the court can do a number of things in the interest of justice, and I suggest and submit that ought to be able to do it also in the public interest. The interest of justice is different from the public interest. The interest of justice is to get from A to B in the matter before the court, whether it's the interest of convicting, releasing, etc. The interest of public interest, the courts are in many contexts authorized to take cognizance and make an assessment of public interest, and I submit that this should be one of such cases. Then the other thing which is really important under 6, which is an omission. When there is information capable of being used as a defense in criminal proceeding, that information must be declassified, given under in camera, given under seal, with a closed courtroom, whatever you want. And there are provisions in this act which enable the court to do so. But if somebody is accused and can prove his or her innocence, should be able to do so no matter what, and cannot be prevented from proving his innocence and not going to jail because the information which would prove his innocence is being classified. Then a general report, I think the report should go to Parliament as well in 47.2, and then comes on 48 the regulations, trying to capture what the Honourable Nanto was saying. In order to come into force and be of effect, any regulation must be approved by a relevant committee of Parliament after the public has been offered the opportunity of making, there is a missing G, submissions thereto. And the reason of the public making submissions is to force the committee to actually apply its mind rather than routinely approve them. Mr. Chairman, are my and our board submissions and amendments with more detailed one on the close-by-close process. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member, I take it you don't have any objections to questions being put to you, questions of clarity. I just wanted to get your express permission, Honourable Member. Questions of clarity, Honourable Members. I see the Honourable Smuts, the Honourable Landers after that.
I don't want to do too much of this, because otherwise we'll never get to Stephen Lee. Dr. Ambrosini, on the threshold required, I forget the clause reference. The threshold required before you can apply for the review of classified material. You have made an argument about the threshold being unacceptable, but what I want to say to you is the threshold is flatly unconstitutional. How can you, under Clause 32 of the Constitution, which gives you your unqualified right of access to information held by the state, except for the law that gives effect to the administrative burden, how can you introduce hurdles and say, oh, NGOs can apply, and what's the other thing? Academics. And you can only apply if it's research or something else. You can't do that. It's unconstitutional, surely.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm not being clear. I agree 100%. And on the strength of that, I deleted the two provisions which create a threshold, and I expanded in my proposed amendment to every individual who has a legitimate interest. Obviously... sorry for not having it articulated as clearly and brilliantly as you do.
On to the Honourable Landers.
My thanks, Chairperson. Through you to Mr. Ambrosini. Your Clause 33B defences, you refer to erroneous classification as a defence. Which suggests to me, and I'm open to correction, that this is classification by error. But further on in the bill, we referred to improper classification, which my understanding is meant to mean illegal or unlawful classification. Surely the defense should apply as much to erroneous classification as it should to unlawful classification. Unless my reading of erroneous is incorrect.
Mr. Chairman, through you, the Honourable Lambert is absolutely right. I apologize, I used the wrong word, I should be improper. As all this has been done very fast. I like him, but perhaps the state law advisors can take us with their greater expertise out of this quandary, but it's that which should have not been done the way it was done.
The difference, Honourable Members, so in getting it wrong and getting it unlawfully wrong, I think there is a difference. I don't know if that is what you're trying to capture.
Well, I'm trying to capture that which was unwarranted as an objective test. It should have not been done. Nobody can go to jail for having publish something which should have not been classified to begin with. Whether it was done by error, was done intentionally, etc. Oh, I forgot to point to another amendment that we suggest. If you disclose something which is classified, you go to jail up to 25 years. If you classify something erroneously, falsely, for purposes of covering up, you get 5 years. What's good for the goods should be good for the gender. We say 25 years for both. Oh, three. Okay, even.
Is there anybody else before I go back to the Honorable Smith? Honorable Smith.
Doctor, your proposal for clause 26, I don't understand why you argue that at the stroke of a pen this sorts many things out. This is, remember we have the two clauses, 23 and 28. Under 23, you can approach a department and apply for declassification of a thing. Under 28, you can approach under the PIA and ask for access. Right, to a classified document. Now, you say, per insertion, that the head must declassify the classified information before releasing, if the relevant information requires mandatory disclosure in terms of the file. But yeah, why, how can it conceivably have been classified in the first place?
Yes.
How can it conceivably be classified in the first place if it is a matter that is not covered by any of the grounds for refusal of disclosure, therefore Chapter 4 of PIA? And even the grounds for refusal in PIA, most of them are discretionary. There are very few of them that are outright mandatory, and most of them deal with third-party personal. So I do not understand how something which under the PIA has to be released could have been classified in the first place. I think there is a lot of such stuff, and I will address you on that matter when I do my bit. I think a lot of stuff is classified that shouldn't be. But as a matter of lawmaking, how can we say this?
See, Mr. Chairman, we are dealing, or at least I encounter a difficulty, because it may be the case that we're dealing with two categories of thought or legal aspects which do not gel together. And I thought about just reading a clause that says all that which must be released in terms of PIA cannot be classified in terms of the Act, which is basically what this ends up to. But some of that which must be released in terms of PIA, it's functional. While that which needs to be classified in terms of this Act is ontological. Is the substance of the information which dictates the nature, not the use you make of it. So, in that disconnection, and I went through the actual provision again without the benefit of the time that perhaps an operation of that nature would require, I felt that by bringing these amendments, one achieves building a bridge between two different substances, so two different natures, so that if something can be asked under PIA, either by virtue of its nature or by virtue of its functionality, and that information must be released under PIA, that leads to its declassification, rather than saying that it should have not been classified in the first place. I'm not sure whether I'm sufficiently clear. I mean, I think I'm quite confident this achieved what I understood the Honorable Smith trying to achieve. And perhaps if we look into details, one can test whether that's the case. But I think we need to proceed from a political understanding that we want to achieve, that there is consensus in achieving that type of result.
Yeah, no, I think the Honourable Member has identified an area that needs to be unified. But where you say that if PIA allows you to get it, the bill cannot disallow you to get it. The bill can't stop you from it. I think that's saying the obvious.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong in saying the obvious. Particularly that there's a clear understanding. This bill does not intend to restrict you from getting information that you are in any event entitled to get through PIA. And I think perhaps that, having been a lot of the complaints, perhaps that is what the Honourable Member is trying to capture. But I do agree that we will come back to that and refine that area perhaps a little bit more, that we are clear what it is, how we want to bring this to merge the two so that there's no contradiction. Are there any further questions? Because I'd like to go to the Honourable Swartz now. The Honourable Swartz has just left. He will come back soon and do his presentation. Can we go to the Honourable Swartz then on your
presentation? Thank you so much, sir. And if I may say to all of our colleagues, what I would like to do is the following. I want to start with clause 49 in order to address clauses 6 and 17. But the end destination of this particular presentation is the application clause, because we feel that we haven't yet, well, we know we haven't yet persuaded you. Everything pivots around the application clause, which is, in our view, still hopelessly too wide. So if you will bear with us, and then I'll end up with the classification and offences, but very briefly, the point of this exercise is to try to persuade you on application. Sir, in December of 1996, the Mandela Cabinet adopted the MIS, the Minimum Information Security Standards. It preceded the PIA, and it assumed certain things which would appear in the PIA. It assumed certain things, and on the basis of those things, it created the MIS. It assumed, for example, that where information is exempted from disclosure, it implies, and I'm quoting from the MIS, it implies that security measures will apply in full. Therefore, it assumed that anything that would appear in the PIA, which might be refused access, the minute a thing had a ground for refusal, it followed logically and necessarily that you would classify it. Now, the MIS system appears to have been functioning on that basis since that time, whereas we know that the PIA, in fact, makes the grounds for refusal of access to information discretionary. It rests on the culture of justification. An official has to think through and justify every decision on every request for access to information. And it seems to me that we have been living under a system which doesn't work in that way. It assumes that there is a lot of stuff that you can refuse disclosure, and it classifies the whole lot. And the MIS then also provides the necessary procedures and measures to protect such information. And the four categories of classification that as I understand them, and that the minister repeatedly refers to, he likes to say that we've dropped one of the categories of classification, applied to all institutions, as far as I can see it. And the classification that has been dropped is the one that used to be called restricted, or still called restricted, and that is simply for inconvenient truths. Material could be restricted if it would be inconvenient to an individual or an institution that it should be disclosed and published. Matters are classified confidential where there could be harm to the objectives of an individual or an institution. Matters are classified secret to prevent disruption of the objectives and functions of an institution. They are classified top secret if the objectives of the institution could be neutralized. The MIS deals with institutions, and an institution is therein defined as any department, body, or organization subject to any law or any private undertaking handling classifiable information by virtue of the national interest. And as far as I can see, and I will benefit from your greater knowledge of this field, but as far as I can see, the result was and is that anything and everything can be classified in South Africa, including entire file blocks or series of information, whereas, of course, in South Africa we observe the principle of severability. Anything and everything can be classified, and it seems to me that the MIS has produced a mess, and that the result was and is that the National Intelligence Agency, which now deals with all institutions as defined, it applies to all institutions, and the National Intelligence Agency, I quote, coordinates, audits, exercises control over information security, in public, parastatal, and private institutions, also over physical security. Now, and the result, as we know from the Castles Ministry, was overclassification, as that ministry told us in this ad hoc committee's predecessor. It resulted in government departments straining under the burden of massive amounts of classified documentation. The Casuals Ministry told us that there exists a default position of secrecy inconsistent with the Constitution, and that that is why this bill was embarked upon. It is because the existing system is unconstitutional. And I think that, that one needs to understand that to understand why certain things are in this bill. Clauses 6 and 17, for example, have no legal effect that I can see. I think that they are there to talk the intelligence community through how fundamental rights work, how they ought to be thinking about access to information and secrecy. And they flow from clause 49. If you look right at the back of the bill, it says that after this new law comes into effect, the MIS continues to operate, but the operatives must go on applying the MIS under clause 6, the general principles of state information, and under clause 17, the principles of classification. That is their purpose in life. Those two clauses read quite prettily because they say things that are really self-evident under the Constitution, but I don't think they have any effect. I think they could simply come out. Clause 6 in particular is problematic because after saying all the pretty things about freedom, it right at the end negates the whole lot by saying all of the above is subject to security, and that of course is not how the limitation of rights works. So 6 could fruitfully come out. But clause 17 is interesting because it's the one that now helps the intelligence community to think through how you do secrecy. And with certain amendments to certain portions, I think that we could think of turning the direction of the classification, which have no effect, into conditions for classification. Because then it fulfills a quite useful purpose. It should no longer say secrecy exists to protect the national interest. It must say something about openness. And certain other things should come out or be amended, and that are in our list of amendments. But I think that we could think of turning them into conditions, alternatively throw them out, because they are only there to tell the intelligence community how things ought to work and how they have not been working all this time. This bill actually perpetuates the existing system, perhaps because the ministry from which it emanates is steeped in that kind of thinking. And sir, and here's the point. The bill still applies to all institutions just as the MIS does. The MIS applies to all institutions. The intelligence community seems to exercise control over all documentation. And this bill just goes from that point straight into the next and assumes that the new bill also will apply to all institutions. In other words, it never answered the questions that the Casuals Ministry asked itself, and which by agreement between the Honourable Mentor and me are the questions that we need to ask ourselves also. And they are, what should be classified? Who should classify? For how long? It seems to me intelligence still thinks everybody is its business, and that is why the application clause still says that the bill applies to all Section 239 organs of state, which, as you know, is defined to include Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act, and which is why the Honourable Landers yesterday still seemed to think that the Algoa Bus Company is any of the bill's business. It does not make sense, Honourable colleagues, because we have already agreed to take out the definition of the national interest, and we've already agreed that national security is the basis on which you classify. So what has the national security got to do with the Algoa Bus Company or the Natal Sharks Board is my favourite one. I think we really have got to tighten this down. We have to bring the application clause down and deal with national security. Surely this bill must apply only to departments dealing, and I've given you our version in the amendments, only to departments dealing with intelligence. Because, in fact, if you take national security as the subject matter of classification in the bill, the Defence Force has its own law in place for classification. Section 104, if memory serves, and makes it subject to the PIA. And the Defence Force also explicitly doesn't want the agency's help for the protection of information, for the filing clerk function. They are already excluded for the whole concept of so-called valuable information. The SAPS, we have heard, has its own law in place, according to the Honourable Annelies, for classification, and the SAPS also explicitly does not want the help of the agency for valuable information, for the filing clerk function. They are excluded. So what remains? Surely what remains is the intelligence agencies, perhaps foreign affairs for the purposes of confidential information sharing on an international level. But it seems to us that the intelligence agencies are what remains. It seems to me that that is what the minister said, as it happens. He too specified intelligence sources, doctrines, and so forth. Surely that is what we should be dealing with. And once we have dealt with the application clause, either by stipulating the departments or stipulating the kind of subject matter ontologically, as Dr. Ambrosini would say, then everything else will fall into place. Then your levels of classification make sense in clause 15, because they are about national security. We are already in the process of defining them in that sense. You classify at certain levels, top secret, secret, and so forth, on the basis of national security and on the basis of the minimum, at minimum, of probable harm thereto. I mean, why else are we classifying? You're classifying against demonstrable probable harm to what? To the national security, as we are in the process of defining. Surely that is what this bill is about. And therefore, we have to get that straight in our heads, then everything else will fall in place. My last remark, sir, the consequential handling of the offences, which then, the offences already follow the cadences of classification. And the offences also only make sense in this context. And we want to express our deep, deep suspicion at the fact that the new ministry, the current intelligence ministry, removed the intention to directly or indirectly benefit another state before locking people up for 25 years for espionage and for hostile activities. I'm really suspicious. How do you lock people up for a quarter of a century if they had no intention of benefiting another state by spying or by hostile activities? And sir, a last word on constitutionality. The security matters which this bill must deal with are discretionary in the PIA. The PIA does prevail, whatever Dr. Ambrosini's thoughts on having laws that prevail, we have them. PIA prevails. And the security matters are discretionary. If we allow them or some of them to be classified, we will have to do quite a lot of thinking. We'll have to be careful that we don't write a challengeable bill. And this is true especially of the hostile activities for which we can lock people up for 25 years and which is not even defined. What is a hostile activity? There's a definition in the PIA, but that's the one we should import here or refer to. But I think we're going to have to be very careful before we write a challengeable bill, and I think it would embarrass all of us if the fruits of our work ended up in court. Thank you.
Yes,
I think the Honourable Dean Smuts, like all of us, needs to listen carefully when we speak. Now, she imports to me something that is not there. She says, I'm still stuck on ensuring that the Algoa Bus Company is able to classify. Now listen carefully to what I said yesterday, because it's in our document. It's written down. This is what I said on page 3, paragraph 8.1. The level to which this delegation can be made must be restricted to a level not lower than Deputy Director General or the equivalent thereof. This will address the Algoa Bus Company scenario. By that we mean the general manager of the Algoa Bus Company, situated somewhere in the Eastern Cape, shouldn't be classifying information. Everyone understood that, including the media, in my initial submission where I referred to the Kukanaap scenario. Now, why does everyone else understand what I'm saying and Dean Smuts doesn't?
Honourable members, please. Are you covered, honourable members? I recognise that honourable Abrasini and then the honourable Minto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to interrogate, if the honourable Smuts allows me to, this issue of the scope. And I like to, because I think that it's critical, and just to put an hypothetical question against the scenario she gave us. Let us assume that the Shark Board does have a piece of information which, if disclosed, a piece of personal information, with the disclosure of which may endanger the life of the individual concerned. There is no obligation under PAIA forcing them not to disclose it. There is no obligation under the Protection of Personal Information Bill that we are engaged with forcing them not to disclose it. Why should we not require the Shark Board to classify the information which can jeopardize the life of one if disclosed? It's top secret. And one expects that this might happen once in a blue moon, because that's not their line of business of having or handling the type of information. But if, when, and maybe, why shouldn't they not apply?
I'm not sure. Is Dr. Ambrosini saying that the Shark Board should warn a person that there's a shark coming at them very fast through the woods? What is the piece of personal information that he... I mean, persuade me, what kind of information might they have that's pertaining to
that? He's saying that...
That's not relevant to this question.
What's relevant here, what the information... What he's saying, the information would contain something that would endanger the life of a particular person if it was disclosed. And his question is, why should that not be classified? Irrespective of what?
Yeah, either that information fits the criteria for classification, or it doesn't. Let's assume for the purpose of the question that it does fit the criteria of the classification. Why should it not classify? It required to be classified.
But I think I've left it open for discussion. That the personal category belongs in this bill at all. You could already, under the PAIA, withhold information if there is a threat or a danger to a person or a building, for that matter. Why do you need to classify? What kind of danger? I mean, I don't want to be just facetious, but why the Natal Shark Board? What kind of danger?
May I continue? See, irrespective of what the criterion is, and one can take out the personal information and can be stuck with the commercial information. One can take that out of could be the sensitive information, the disclosure of which may cause blah, blah, blah. Whatever the box is, the question is if an organ of state beyond those which you suggested should be the only, should define the scope of application of the bill, would end up having that type of information. Why should it not be required to classify? Because in PAIA it is correct that information is contemplated, but not in terms of you must not tell. It's in terms of you can withhold that information. It's beyond PAIA reach. The right of access does not apply.
Does the IFP classify a certain document about personal danger to people or any kind of other? Do you? I mean, it's not my impression that classification is something that institutions do unless they deal with a kind of work. For example, the SARS has its own laws. I'm sure if it classifies, it does so under its own laws. Certain institutions dealing with certain kind of matters or material would classify. But it's not a generalized phenomenon, surely. I mean, if you have personal information that you don't want anyone seeing, you yourself would put it away. The personal danger to... You see, it's just too speculative for me. I think I would want something more concrete. You can't on a speculative basis say, oh, but somebody might come into possession of information that might endanger a person's life, therefore everybody must classify. Doesn't make sense to me.
Honourable Member, I don't think the Honourable Abrasini was talking about personal information now or something specific to a person. He extended the example now to commercial information. And I think what he's really saying is, are you not prepared to concede that there are departments that you don't want to fall in the ambit of the Act of the Bill that might have information that needs to be classified? I think that's really what he's saying.
You're helping me? And I think the answer is no. For example, the fact that he still contemplates wanting to... He still wants to bring back some forms of commercial information. Absolutely not. We've taken every incarnation of commercial out of the bill now. And that's the way it should be. If a need for the protection of commercial information arises, let it happen under the other statutes. I mean, there are laws, institutions, codes. These things exist. It's not the job of the intelligence community, in my view, to deal with all life on Earth and everything that goes on, you know? I mean, there are already whole bodies of law that look after those things, and the needs for security and secrecy and protection of information have already evolved over the years for the other sectors. So I come back to the question. What is it that it should be classified under this? This is intelligence law. This is not law for the entire South Africa. What is it that should be classified by who, for how long? And I don't think that the scope of the intelligence ministry or intelligence law is the entire South Africa or all life on there.
Honourable Abrasini, I don't think you're going to get the answer. What do you want to go on further, or can I... the Honourable Mentor and then the Honourable Mania.
My question of seeking clarity is not directed to, it's directed to yourself and your meeting. I'm struggling to grapple with a principle of law because of the continued juxtaposition of this bill with year. I would like to know, Chair, my little bit of understanding Bush law is that some pieces of legislation often supersede others. For instance, if there is conflict or lack of clarity between a piece of legislation that pertains to a provincial department and there is a piece of legislation that was put into place by this August House, which is national law. National law will supersede provincial law. That's my basic understanding of this principle of law. Now I want to tease out that relationship between, if any, between or how it will evolve or what is the thinking or the intention between this bill and PAIA. I'm asking this because the strongest area of contention or contestation, actually, is certain sections of PAIA and how they relate to this bill. So I need you to clarify me in terms of
just hold on, the honourable member's not finished yet.
I'm sorry. I would like the learned friends in this house to learn to be a bit tolerant for those who are not learned friends. Chairperson, can you assist me with that principle of law?
Honourable member, I don't know if you're speaking to me as the chair or as an attorney now. Yesterday I did recommend that the drafters consider for the moment the whole question of the Whistleblowers Act, and also I mentioned prior that at some time they would come back and present to the committee just how the two laws that are already in existence will affect the bill that we are present with and what precautions we should take regarding how we proceed here. I think perhaps that would be the way to go for fear that I might give you a correct answer that might confuse you now, and also that we might be out of line with what we are doing now. We are trying to get the presentation so that we can go forward. Can we flag that thing and give that work to the drafters to come and present to us, which I think is going to be a very important presentation, how the Disclosures Act and the PIO Act is going to be affected by this thing and the precautions that we should take. I think it's going to be necessary that we get that. Can I leave that to the drafters, honourable member?
You are a very brilliant lawyer, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's the Honourable Mania now. Is there...
Can I take check on this point, Mr. Chairman?
This is on this point.
On your last ruling.
I don't want you to now give the legal opinion now.
No.
You want to... explore the a better possibility or
a way forward on this issue, Mr. Chairman, if I may. This is going to be a crucial issue, and I have got very strong views on the matter, which I'm not going to put to you unless you ask me to. But I would suggest that we ask a legal opinion from a qualified constitutionalist on whether or not it's possible for a law to state that a subsequent law to insulate itself from the ordinary amending effect of a subsequent law, irrespective of what it says, because I know what Paya says, and I think that's crucial to our deliberations. I can give you my opinion, the Honourable Smart can give their opinion, but I think we need to have something sufficiently authoritative on the table that to create consensus on that issue.
Honourable Member, the answer is actually quite simple, but we'll wait for the... Honourable Swartz, did you want to intervene on this particular point?
May I firstly apologise, I thought that you were finished. I didn't mean to interrupt you at all. But I was going to refer to Section 5 of PIO, but let's wait the legal opinion.
Yeah, I think... it's something that is long wait that we need to get to, so I think that's the best way to deal with it. Can I then move on to the Honourable Mania, and then after that the Honourable Landers, and after that... he's asked to be heard, and I would like to hear. This is questions of clarification, Honourable Member.
Honourable Landers is very jumpy this morning.
So let's hear you on questions of clarification, Honourable Member.
The Chair, I really wanted to address a question to the Honourable Landers, if he's prepared to take a question.
No, Honourable Member, you... both of you, I'm not going to change the procedure. The procedure is regarding... clarification, and we still have to get to the Honourable Swart's presentation. So can I go on to the Honourable Lawners and Honourable Mayne, you two, if there's time left, we'll get to find out what it is you two want to say to each other. The Honourable Lawners, is this?
Yeah, the question. Chair, is it given the DA's strong views on the application of the bill, my question to the Honourable Dean Smuts then is there nothing, absolutely nothing, falling within the purview of the Western Cape government that requires protection or classification?
Your answer is no.
The intelligence is a national competency, right? And if you agree with us that that is what this bill should deal with, and with the minister, with us and with the minister, as it happens, that that is what this bill should deal with, then no, it wouldn't affect the Western Cape, except possibly in as much as they too have direct international relations. Whether they have international relations in respect of security and intelligence matters, I simply do not know. But if they do, and if they have any international dealings that require confidentiality, those could sit under normal arrangements for confidentiality and breach thereof, or perhaps you'd classify. But I think that the bill should be about intelligence, and therefore I would think that the Western Cape would not. I think I'd buy Islam. You see, the women. But what your other departments deal with, the provincial competencies, they deal with different kinds of subject matter. The provincial police department would sit under the police laws. There is no provincial defense department. The provincial department on economic development and business would work under all of the statutes pertaining to that kind of thing. He's feeling very pleased with himself, sir.
So there's no secrets in the Western government. Honourable members, please, can we have the... Is it a question or are you ready for your presentation now, Honourable Sir? Okay, sorry, the Honourable Mentor has a question before we get back to the Honourable Sir.
Honourable Dean Smuts, with the issue of the application law, if she says that this law should apply only to state organs and departments that deal with security, are you foreseeing that, foreseeing and implying that because the Police Act has provisions that allow their intelligence to classify, or the defense force for instance, because they have a law that allows them to classify, are you implying and foreseeing that not a single person serving in the police service or a single person that serves in defense force will ever be tried on the basis of this law? They should be exempt, because whatever they do, they will, when it comes to classification and those things, they have to do only under their laws that put them into existence. So you are saying this bill should actually exempt from this law by virtue of them having their own law under which they are, or they are able to classify.
I think the only offences clause that comes to mind that would be applicable is the Chikane clause, the 43, the one that criminalises the release of information about the agency itself, isn't it? But because the rest are general ones. We don't have in South Africa a crime of espionage. We have now created one. We should discuss, by the way, the term of imprisonment. But the crime of espionage, it's a thing in its own right, and it would apply to any person who spies. The crime of the hostile activity, which we have yet to define, but which Breyer has a definition of, it's all about subversion and so forth. That by definition, an offence applies to anybody, right? But the first I can think of that your question relates to is 43, which deals with the divulging of information about the agency.
You are conceding that 43 will apply to defense intelligence and to the police. I don't know if law can work like that, Chief Justice. If you... Sorry?
I think 43 is written for people divulging information about the agency as defined in this bill.
Chair, I don't think that law can be applied in that way. I don't think that, much as I'm a bit of a layperson in terms of law, I don't think that we can say that only as one clause of this act can apply to defense, intelligence, to the police, etc., but in terms of your application clause to say this should apply to, I don't think that you can apply clauses of, or some clauses of this code to those departments, and then the rest you say that does not apply to them. Doesn't make sense.
Expressing myself really poorly, I think an offence applies to everyone, right? Except for 43, which clearly deals with the people who work for the agency. But when I talk about the application of the law, I'm talking about classification and whose classification should it apply to. And if the police already have their own act and defence already has its own act, they already classify, then it mustn't apply to them. And when I say application, I mean the other thing is this treatment of valuable information, which I don't understand why the intelligence community keeps an eye on how people file. Do they file them with valuable information, not sensitive information? That's what I mean by application, these two things. Classification and this business of the looking after the information.
Chair, my conclusion is that DINSMART has conceded that there are whole sections of this bill that will apply even to defense, even to the police, much as they do have their own acts that allow them to do so, and by so I'm saying this debate about the application clause that this bill should apply only to security agencies.
She has come, so she's done some kicking and screaming. Let's concede the honourable. Smuts has vigorously tried to protect the position here. You'll have to find another day to persuade her, definitely. Can we go on to the Honourable Swartz and hear what you have there for us, sir?
Thank you, Chair. And a lot of the issues have been covered. I won't labour the issues, but maybe just as an opening point, the concern from our side is harmonisation. I think that's a general concern with other laws, particularly with PIA after the legal request. And one needs to just, and I'm not going to go into the legal opinion on that, but just to bear in mind that PIA is a constitutionally enjoined piece of legislation required in terms of the Constitution. All laws, one can say indirectly, are linked to the Constitution, but this was the national legislation was required in terms of Section 32, and there is that peremptory clause in Section 5 that says it will go beyond all other laws, it will bind all other laws, and we will get a legal opinion on that. But it will be useful, Chair, as well, in view of what the interaction that just took place, as to consider the harmonisation of other laws, the SAPS classification law, the defence classification law. To what degree, how does that impact us? How does it impact this? Is it relevant at all on the question of application? So, Chair, that's just generally a thought that struck me. To go through our specific submission, clearly we're not going to, the national interest and commercial information has been deleted. We're not going to go into a lot of detail about that. One of our concerns relates to file series categorization of classification that we would consider that we need to look at that. I think the core aspect is the definition of national security and to reach an agreement on that. And our definition is set out under paragraph A, number 6, and is submitted to you for consideration. It was largely taken from print media, but print media had a clause which we deleted, which was in our first submission, which we've now amended, and that clause related to the capacity of the Republic to respond to the use or threat of force, and we couldn't see how that fits in. It doesn't, it's not logical. So that's our submission. It's very similar to the ANC submission on that definition, and narrower. I think the ANC's proposal is slightly broader. I think you add in PES in and another issue of international organizations as well. But that issue of the capacity clause is something, but I think we can reach consensus pretty easily across political lines on the definition of national security, and that is the core of where we're going to, I think. Chair, then, just to continue briefly, we share concerns about the issue under paragraph 9. I'm not going to go through every item here. There is a written document before you, but the issue of minimum sentencing, under our paragraph 9, we refer to delete subparagraph 5. It should be subparagraph 6 of clause 1. We share concerns relating to minimum sentencing, and we suggest deleting of that paragraph. However, if the committee decides to insert minimum sentencing, then that paragraph obviously must come back because it relates to compelling circumstances where a judge can deviate from minimum sentences. So that would need to then come back. To the next page, again, I'm not going to go through a lot of detail. Paragraph B, Chapter 2, General Principles, we would submit that should be deleted. Or Chapters 3 and 4, a consideration there particularly as to which should go into regulations, which should be deleted, and I look forward to an engagement on those issues. Chapter 5, we've agreed national interest and commercial information should be deleted. As far as Chapter 6 is concerned, again, we're concerned about in Clause 14, the broad categorization, files, etc. We need to narrow that down somehow. That's too broad in our view. And then Clause 15, on the classification levels, you recall our previous submission where we suggested to reconsider the threshold test. We believe in an objective test that should be applied with the standard of reasonableness, and that's based on the Mamabolo case. And we've got proposed wordings there to insert the words which could, that's under our E3, which could reasonably be expected to cause harm. That would give you a confidential classification. Could reasonably be expected to cause serious harm, would result in a secret classification. Could reasonably be expected to cause exceptionally serious or irreparable harm, would result in top secret classification. And that introduces an objective test. Chair, then just to look at the bottom of our page, we would clause 18, we'd look at that public domain test of possession, either there or under the offences clause. That is a submission that we'd make. Then on to our next page, chapter 7, we would again like that objective test there under clause 21. Instead of the discretion may, we'd like to have the test could reasonably be expected to be inserted there. And that we would also, that's the critical clause 23, is the public interest override, which we would like to see a consideration to inserting it there, which would compelling declassification, and that ties it in with PIA, with the and that would seek to harmonize this legislation with the provisions of PIA and the public interest override, which is set out in section 41 of PAIA, which overrides Section 46, which is the refusal to grant access to information. Chair, then, we did allude to the independent oversight on the appeals section, clause 25. We would like to see, one can have a discussion, but we would like to see an independent oversight body, whether it's the judge as suggested or something separate. We would like to see that inserted. Chair, then, chapter 10 needs to be re-looked at as to the wide-ranging responsibility of the State Security Agency. Consequential amendments as we go along, bearing in mind if one agrees national interest, commercial information is removed. Obviously the ambit of State Security Agency is narrowed, but we'd like to just not necessarily delete that, but re-look at that issue of Chapter 10, what is the responsibility of the State Security Agency. And then Chapter 11, which is the offences and penalties. Firstly, the espionage offences, 25 years, we need to have a relook at that. It says 15 to 25 years at the moment. It's also, and we would also like the introduction of the intent must be made very clear there. Chair, we'd also like to hear the reference to minimum sentences to be deleted or reconsidered. And then key aspect here is the tying up with the Protected Disclosures Act. And we would like to have that considered under Clause 38 together with under Clause 43. Now, there, Chair, the one submission asks that Clause 43 be deleted and public interest defence is inserted. Here we are saying let's look at considering deleting. What were the implications if one can one delete the whole of 43 and insert a public interest defence in its place? We say consider this, but at the very least we would like to see a public interest defence in its place as we've set out there. Now, under our suggestion, under 2A to E, those words come directly from the Public Protected Disclosures Act, which, as we know, protects whistleblowers, and we think it is worthy of consideration, particularly to bring in a harmonization with this legislation and the Protected Disclosures Act. And Chair, then, under our submission on 6, we would like to see on the next page a new subclause to deal with information in the public domain, which gives a defence that no person is guilty of an offence if the information was in the public domain at the time of the disclosure. And then, Chair, as far as information before the courts, the Masetla judgment is helpful to look at that. And those are our, obviously there are consequential amendments that will follow, and that's our submission from the ACDP side. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, do I recognise the honourable member?
I just want to normally know you refer to the name of the person in relation to law when the courts have ruled on the matter. Is it proper for us here to keep on saying that Clause 43 is the Frank Chikane Clause? Do you legislate for to deal with individuals, or do you lead? I just want to know the correctness of us keeping on saying this is a Frank Chikane Clause. What new clause does he have? You're honoring him. You're supporting him.
Honourable member, please. No, honourable member. Can we have order? Can we have order, honourable member?
The word is not.
Yes, she chose to associate herself with the person and gave some. She could have called it some other name. Cecil Burgess Clause, I suppose, would have been much better. Honourable members, you have heard the submission from the Honourable Swat. Sorry. You seem to be in agreement with the Honourable. You seem to have no questions of clarity on the.
Yeah, but those don't have a comment.
I thought you were going to be asking him, particularly from the AHC side, what was this thing about the public interest clause?
Well,
So the silence is not conceding that. Yes, the Honourable Abrasini, please, a private conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Honourable Swartz spoke about it, touched on it. I think the Honourable Smith spoke about more. Also, she touched on it without going into the meat of it. I was wondering whether I can seek through you the assistance of the Honourable Swartz in respect of the of the crime of hostile activity. I didn't list it as one of the things which one would suggest to delete, but I had a great deal of difficulties in understanding what it is, as opposed to espionage, and I think the Honourable Smith had a similar sense. But since he mentioned 33, since you mentioned having similar problems, if you could expand, if you would.
May I offer to read the definition from BIAS?
No, the question is put to the Honourable Swartz.
I beg your pardon.
With hostile is the, is the, I mean, the espionage is to get something classified, give it to a foreign state to harm the South Africa, which I understand. Then, but hostile is to give the classified stuff, which give it to a foreign state, in a situation where the staff could directly or indirectly prejudice the state. So I read this, say that one day they classify the crime statistics, and one takes the crime statistics and publishes them or gives them to another agency outside the country, and the country looks bad. Now, that all the other statistics of failing septic tanks throughout South Africa, I mean sewage treatment facilities, that prejudices the state. And I just I don't know whether it was part of your submission, but because it was mentioned, I thought.
Chair, I never dealt specifically with the issue of hostile activities, but it's an interesting discussion, and I would like to hear what Paya says on that, but it's not a specific issue which I raised. I referred to hostile act in the definition of national security. Hostile acts of foreign intervention, which could form part of the definition of national security, but not in the context of hostile activity offences, but that deliberation we can have at a certain stage if Mr. Abrasini has got a difficulty with that specific proposal. Thank you, Chair.
It's the Honourable Lawrence first and then the Honourable Swartz.
Chairperson, both Steve Swart and Dean Smuts have made this point that the police have their classification laws, and our National Defence Force have their own classification laws. Now, I'm not sure as to the correctness of that assertion, but I'm open to correction. And so I'm asking if the state law advisors can just please, not necessarily today, present us with what those laws are, if they exist. Please, Chairperson.
The Honourable Smuts.
May I first assist the Honourable Llewellyn? If you look at the Casrolls Ministry explanatory notes dated 13 June 2008, at point 8, reads as follows: national laws and regulations prohibit the disclosure of certain information. Such laws include the Protection of Information Act of 82, the South African Police Services Act 68 of 95, the Intelligence Services Act 65 of 2002, the Intelligence Services Oversight Act 40 of 94, the Defence Act 42 of 2002, the Public Service Regulations. Examples of such provisions include, I won't read the 1982 one, But then your own one, sir, Intelligence Services Act 2002, makes it an offence for any person and member or members, former members of any intel service, to disclose classified information under certain circumstances. Now, whether the Frank Chikane clause is going to repeal that one or amend it, I don't know. You will know. I don't know. But those are the examples, and they deal specifically with the prohibition of disclosure of information. Sir, may I offer you a hostile activity? There's no way we can write that hostile activity offence and much of this bill without, of course, aligning it with Section 41 of the FIRE, which deals with exactly these matters. And it's in the Section 41 of the FIRE that you find discussion of something called subversive or hostile activities. Because whether you disclose or not, do not disclose information about certain bodies and the detection, prevention, suppression, curtailment of subversive or hostile activities depends on the definition, and it is as follows. Subversive or hostile activities means A. Aggression against the Republic. B. Sabotage or terrorism aimed at the people of the Republic or a strategic asset of the Republic, whether inside or outside the Republic. C. An activity aimed at changing the constitutional order of the Republic by the use of force or violence. D. A foreign or hostile intelligence operation.
Honourable Member, I thought we were getting clarity on the Swartz's presentation, but be that as it may, some useful information about hostile activity. You want clarification on your own presentation?
Just a response to Mr. Landers on the issue of the other acts. I think it is important. Reference is made to the Defence Act Section 104 that we can ask the state law advisors to look at. The National Supplies Procurement Act also deals with classified information, not specifically, but it contains a whole lot of prohibitions on the disclosure of information. Now, that is a very old act, and it will be useful to find out whether it still applies or not. It's a 1970 act. But those two, and then I understand there was reference yesterday to the SAPS Act. But clearly, it's to me, I'm not saying that we need guidance as to what impact this act has on those and how one harmonizes them. And I think we need to, I support a narrow application, but I would like further guidance on that issue. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Members, my understanding of this urgency of this piece of legislation was particularly the fact that presently it is the misdocument and misdocument only that allows for classification of information. If there is another law that allows for classification, I'm not aware of it. All classification that has been taking place to date has been done through the misdocument. And any law that has been referring to classified information has not been referring to the process of classification. Even the constitutional courts have said, when matters have come before it relating to matters of classification, that they have accepted that the matters before them have been properly classified and have not actually gone into the classification aspect of the matter. Hence, if you understand the misdocument or understand the urgency of the of getting this piece of legislation to Parliament, if there is another view on this matter, I would like to hear it. That, in my view, is the official view as far as I understand it. Yes?
See? Yeah. Thank you. We must ask the Honourable Annelies again. She confirmed the other day that the SAPS does classify.
It would be under the miss. The Honourable Abrasili.
Well, just if I can be, since we are on the realm of the anecdotal, when I was in Home Affairs, we classified. But we did it under MIS. And let me tell you, I applied MIS. It's an horrendous piece of legislation or whatever it is. So I agree with the Chair that the sooner we move with this bill, the greater the service we render to the country and the and everyone.
Honourable members, no further questions or clarification. I think we got to the end of this session now. Perhaps I would just sorry, the honourable member, did I ignore you? It wasn't intentional.
I was wondered whether the honourable Landers would be prepared to take a question.
Yes, honourable Landers. Is there a proposal you'd like to take a question? Honourable Manny, you will proceed with your question. I will decide whether your question is admissible or not.
A get-out clause. Chair, my question goes to part of what we've debated here today, and that is about the application of the bill. I would wonder if the Honourable Landers could clarify what national security-related information, as has been defined in the ruling party's submission, is likely to be in the possession of the Natal Sharks Board and would need classification.
They have access to the documents in the Sharks Board.
You know, Chair, the DA have a serious listening problem. They hear you, but they don't listen to you. They're trying to say in our document, and this is now the fifth time, we don't want it to extend that far. And that is why we are saying the power of the DG to delegate must be restricted to his immediate underling. No. That's what we need to address in the bill. You can't have the general manager of the Algoa Bus Company classifying it information. That's why I say you don't listen. Now, do you understand what I've just said? We don't want the general manager of the Algoa Bus Company classifying information. Now, David is saying to me, well, what information is there that the Algoa Bus Company should classify? There is none. Now, we are saying to you, restrict the authority to classify to the DG.
Of what?
And?
Of any department.
Why? Why do you want it lower down?
If they're not dealing with national security, why?
That's another matter.
If the Western Cabinet, some national security issues like that, but they don't, no, not under the law. Then why?
But that wasn't David's question. David's question to me was, what information does the Sharks Board have that must be classified? Our approach in our document is, we don't want people at that level to be classifying information. Now, what is it that you, there that you don't, it's clear to everyone else except you, and I know why. Yes, we've swept the carpet from under you. We've pulled it. Yes, the rug has been pulled from under you and you don't like it.
Mr. Chairman,
it is about the level. It is.
Honourable members, it's Friday.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm quite excited because I'll be going home soon.
So please,
can we reduce the temperatures to acceptable levels now?
I have said that.
Mr. Chairman,
I have said. Honourable Mania, you are not going to get your answer. Your colleague earlier on was screaming and kicking when the honourable mentor was trying to interrogate a similar concession from her. And I don't think you're going to get a concession from Mr. Landers, so stop trying. I recognise the honourable Abercini first, and then the honourable mentor.
Subject to your ruling, but I think that there is value in this discussion, if we can look at it dispassionately, objectively, and I want to go to the, because I have a difficulty with the ANC Honourable Landers position, if I understand it correctly. I mean, we're dealing with a problem. The problem is, can any Tom, Dick and Harry classify? his solution is, let's put that label high enough, and there is where the delegation stops. My difficulty is that I know in the practice of government and the everyday business, you create a document, and the first thing you do when you create a document, you classify top secret comes on top, and otherwise you read the document at the end, it says you should have not read this to anyone else, and it's at the end, it's the first thing is top secret, and you can't go to the DG and says, please classify this code for me, and I come back and send the letter out. So the label goes down. On the Natal, on the shark board of the what is the Alcoa? Algorithm company. It's like a Monty Python sketch. I'm waiting for somebody to knock at the door in the uniform of Alcoa company and say, excuse me. But the fact is that in all likelihood, neither of two institutions will ever classify anything, or will ever be under the obligation of classifying anything. They will receive these guidelines or the regulations, whatever it is, and they will receive them, they put them in a thing and say, this doesn't apply to us. But if and when something applies to them, then they will classify. If they are given a piece of information which we around this table may not conceive now, they will need to classify if it fits the statutory criteria. Our burden is that of having very clear, very identifiable statutory criteria, A, B, C, D. And I don't like to legislate by virtue of examples. I like to legislate by virtue of concepts, ideas which are clear and distinct. And if we satisfy ourselves that the idea we put in the bill are in fact justifiable, clear, distinct, and understandable, then if that situation happens, wherever it happens, the issue of classification will become relevant. It may very well be the case that a very large administration, like the Department of Education, will never ever classify anything. And it may be the case that a small itsy-bitsy organ of state, say the PBMR, if we'll ever survive, may end up having a huge amount of itself classified. But this is the nature of the beast which determines the cage it needs to be put in.
I think what the Honourable Member is saying, and what has always been the position of the bill, is the authority to classify must be there. The fact that the authority may never be used is another matter. Is that correct, Honourable Member? The Honourable Mentor.
Chair, firstly, I want to reiterate what I said yesterday and ask my colleagues to bear with me about Chapter 5, whether we will eventually completely delete it or whether we shouldn't carefully look if there is anything that could be retained in Chapter 5. Secondly, Chair, I don't think that national, you see this issue of, I don't know if I heard this mark properly, but the issue of the argument that national security is a national competence, I would like to hear her out a little bit. You see, I'm scared that we want to limit the authority to classify to DG, or DG may delegate to the underling, the immediate underling under himself or herself. For me, a director general is a director general. You have some of a national department. You also have something called head of department in provincial government. I want to submit that it's national security is not the purview of intelligence only, neither is it the purview of national department only. And I think I can prove that next week when we meet again.
the...
No. I don't elevate individuals. I will address it to the committee.
Honourable Bainia?
Chair, I mean, if that is correct, then the challenge for our committee is to specify which institutions are institutions involved in national security operations and specify that. But I think it is useful to look at the more absurd examples like the Natal Sharks Board, because those are the hard cases. I'm sure that everybody agrees that the sharks off the coast of KwaZulu-Natal do not and will never pose a threat to national security.
When our neighbors decide to poison them, fit them with listening devices that are going to...
I wouldn't mean that.
What did you say?
No, the chairperson said that what if our neighbors poison them or they give them like listening devices?
I know of a situation, and those who read the papers will know of a situation where some people threatened to poison a reservoir of water supplying a very huge chunk of a community or communities in a locality, which is in a provincial location and municipality, and if somebody does that or if somebody fulfills that threat, that person will implement that threat at a local level, and that borders on security. If somebody can, in fact, Chairperson, there are also institutions that are regulated by another act that are called national key points. But others are not even specified in that act, but they lend themselves to being vulnerable to, if attacked, expose the state and the people of the republic to dangers. So, Chair, I said next week I will demonstrate that national security is not the purview of national departments only, or of security agencies and organs of things only. That's the first thing. Secondly, Chair, I don't think, much as I'm not a learned friend, I don't think that you write laws by doing what an honorable, what's the surname again, sir? Maniar. Maniar. David. Yeah. I don't think that you write a law like, you can write a law like that, where you specify each and every Dick, Tom and Harry of department, locality and whatever, where the law should apply. I don't think that's the right approach.
I think the alternative is also correct, that the Honourable Abrosini said that it doesn't help looking at examples that are perhaps ridiculous and try and find examples that will nullify a particular view. I think one looks at national security as a whole, and how it would affect, and how it could affect the country. It's not mapped. One never knows what matter of national security. It would be a simple human being crossing the border with some very dangerous disease. It could become a matter of national security where that person is, and so it's very difficult to start looking at examples and to legislate against examples. Mm-hmm. That may. So I think we need to get the principle right, which is, I think, what the Honourable Abrosini is saying, and see how we can help one another. Did you have a question, Honourable Lawrence?
The Chairman, I thought one needed to address the point made by the DA that national security pertains to the intelligence services and they reside there. That's a very simplistic approach. It doesn't.
You see, the chair has raised the point. An individual crosses the river, which is our border line, comes into the country, and he's carrying a very serious disease that's going to kill off tens of thousands of people. you're assuming that they know that he's crossed the border.
In the be mass panic.
Honourable members,
people be throwing money to get out of the country.
Honourable members, I withdraw my example, honourable members. the honourable Shilowa.
I think maybe we're done. I was just really going to say that I think that it's good to have this kind of discussion, but I'm not sure if it's also helpful in terms of the poll, because I think it's really more about protection of state information polls. So we really need to be able to say, look, what are we trying to do? We're trying to say, look, is there a need to protect information? What process? We say through classification. Who classify? Who should get involved? What is the finance agencies and so forth? And I think once we do that, it will be much more easier to be able to arrive at how do you find the balance between classifying information for national security in whatever it's defined with the need to ensure that the South African public is not prejudiced by way of information which it should be able to have and have access to. And I think that's really where the challenge for me is going to be. It's less about what you classify is. How do you find the balance that your concern must always be open and transparent society, but one in which you may need to be able to protect certain information, and therefore how do you classify and so forth.
Just before I'm going to close the discussion now, I think we've reached the end. Just to get some clarity from you, Honourable Shilowa, are you going to move with the process now, or do you have a document of your own that you're going to present? Because what I really would like now is for the drafters to take the submissions that we have, ANC 1, DA 1, those documents, and to analyze them and bring us a document, one document where we can see perhaps where there are areas where there is agreement, because there are a lot of concessions given here, and that might be easily dealt with, and where there are areas of contention where the debates will obviously be extended. Can we ask, can I get permission from the members of the committee that that be the process that we follow now? Perhaps you must ask the Honourable Manu, was he also not listening? Honourable members, what I'm saying is we have a number of documents now that have been presented by various parties. I would like to ask the drafters to take those documents and synchronize them and bring us one document where we can look at and see where there is consensus, or where we meet each other and where the contentious areas are, and then we can talk to that document. Perhaps there would be areas there that we would be able to concede and move on, and the areas of contention would perhaps then become less. Can we leave that for the next session? Now, having said that, I asked the Honourable Shilowa, are you going to participate in that process? Because if you are going to present a document of your own, it's going to have to be soon, because what we are looking for is that this will take place at the next meeting, which is going to be on Tuesday, the 9th, at 3:15. We don't have a venue yet, but members will be known, who will be given the venue. We didn't have the meeting in the morning because we looked at, you will recall that there are a lot of other members that are going to other committees during the morning period. Hence, we got permission from Parliament to sit in the afternoon. So we'll be sitting at 1,515 till 1,700 hours. If you do intend to present a document, Honourable Member, then it needs to be in time so that it can be incorporated to this thing. I don't know if I don't want to deprive you an opportunity of doing presenting a document, but can we hear you on whether you intend to present a document?
I think that in the interest of us moving forward, I think let's go with the process that you have, and to an extent that there are issues that we want to take issue with, we'll take them as we incorporate going forward, rather than delay the process.
So you'll react with the consolidated document.
Yeah.
Honourable members, I think that seems to be the way. Yes.
You gave us that potential schedule of meetings, which included, apart from the Tuesday afternoon one, the next Friday. Now, might we ask you, I mean, there are other committees that are trying to meet. Dr. Ambrosini and I already have constitutional review on that Friday, but we start quite early. But we are trying very desperately to get the other information bill concluded, and I know that the Honourable John Jeffrey is looking for that Friday. What is your thinking? Surely we are going to ask the House for a new date, because we expire on the 16th, don't we? So presumably we're going to take a resolution to the House, or a motion, asking it to give us a new deadline well into next year. And if that is the case, when will we conclude our work now for this year?
Honourable Member, I can't exclude the possibility that next Friday all Honourable Members come and say that we have agreed that this is the way the bill should look, in which case we might have a completed bill before the 16th. From what I hear now, I can't exclude it, Honourable Member. We get instructions, and I have to lead the process, that we are busy working, and that the work will continue even after the Friday when the House rises. I unfortunately then cannot pretend not to want to work, because I know you will follow me if I decide not to work. So I have to call these meetings, Honourable Members, and we have to look at the program, and that is the best we can do. I would be rolled over the coals if I were to decide that there's no necessity to call meetings, because the bill is not going to be finished in any event. What I say is that we are trying our best. We are moving as best we can, on the understanding that this is a bill that needs to be considered. And if it is that we reach a situation at the end of the process that we have not completed, then so let it be. But I think it would be inappropriate for me to say now, we are not going to finish this bill, let's go home. I will going to get into serious trouble on the members. So let's work. We are achieving a lot of good work here, and there are other interested people watching the process, to see how the process unfolds, and I think it is very necessary that they understand and see how the process works, and it's not just, and so I think let's give also the audience the benefit of understanding what's happening here, and also the fact that we are working, that we are taking this work on this particular bill series, and I hope the Honourable Members will be clear with me on that. Honourable Members, can we then agree that next Tuesday we will meet, and we will then get a document. Hopefully the document will be circulated before we meet, to give the Honourable Members time to look at the document. It will be a consolidated document of the presentations that we have had, and we will then look and see what the document reveals, where are the areas of consensus, and so on. Honourable Members, if that is it, then I declare this meeting adjourned.